Is prison obsolete? We all know about incarceration, but have you heard of decarceration? Why do we invest so much in metal cages and punitive approaches? Are there alternatives that might create strong and safe communities without criminalisation, without surveillance and over-policing? The system here locks up Aboriginal people at a phenomenal rate that's comparable to black people in the US. In Australia, 27% of the prison population is Indigenous, although we are just over 2% of the overall population. It's black bodies that populate the jails, fortifying the prison industrial complex. That's what they call it. Now, abolitionists argue it's a form of segregation, that isolating people in a metal cage only creates the illusion that a social problem has been fixed. Last month, the prisoner advocacy group Sisters Inside held its 8th international conference in Brisbane. The focus was the failure of prison reform. The theme instead was the abolition of the prison system and the need to find creative and long-term solutions.
I'm Erica Miners, and I live in Chicago, Illinois, which is Potawatomi and Anishinaabe land. Some of the work that I've done most recently is to support access to education for people inside prison and after release from prison, which is a challenge in the United States. And I'm also a member of a national PIC, or Prison Industrial Complex Abolitionist organization called Critical Resistance. The movement to build strong and safe communities that don't rely on police and prisons is a long movement in the United States. And many communities, you know, for the last hundreds of years have developed ways to respond to harm and violence in their communities that don't rely on policing and imprisonment. So perhaps for some communities, it's a new thing, it's scary. But for other communities, like, you know, immigrants in my neighborhood or people who aren't legally documented by the state, you know, they're not going to call the cops. So when harm happens, they're not going to call the cops because they don't want to get deported. They don't want to get their family member deported. So they're building, you know, maybe it's not always perfect, maybe it's messy, but they're building ways to try to reduce harm without, you know, the intervention of policing. So I think that sometimes when we talk about abolition in other contexts, people think, ooh, it's so scary, it's so different. I think we have long histories in every community across the planet of trying to figure out what to do when bad things happen, when we can't isolate people, when we can't just try to bury the problem. So I think it's important to draw on those histories, make those histories visible. I was so appreciative at this convening to hear some of the histories of the radical work that's been happening in this land, right? I take energy from that and politics from that. Other thing that's important to remember in this conversation is the way in which we've allowed the, you know, prison industrial complex, or the carceral or punishing state, to sort of define what counts as public safety, right? Like, oh, people are, you know, worried about bullying in schools, so we're going to put more surveillance cameras in schools, even though we know that doesn't work, right? So I think part of the work of an abolitionist practice is this sort of, you know, decolonization, about really getting people to think and recognize the ways in which we've allowed the prison industrial complex to tell us what public safety is. And it doesn't work, right? So it's like, what's going to make us safer is bigger borders between other countries. You know, Chicago, just, we have a history of the violence of policing, and we've had an incredible amount of media attention on that this year, and also killings by the police of young black men. We've been in the streets trying to raise the visibility of the violence of policing. You know, we were successful in getting the head, you know, police officer to step down. But then, you know, the mayor decided, you know, what we're going to do to make the city more safe is hire 500 more cops, right? We already spend 40% of the city budget of Chicago on policing, right? Like, we don't need more cops. We know what's going to make our, especially the same week that the public school teachers were going to go on strike because they don't have enough money, right? And they're being forced to cut classes, to expand classes, you know, to drop services for young people because we don't have enough money for our public schools. So I think it's really important to try to push to say that public safety does not equal more police on our streets. We know that. We have tons of evidence of that, you know. But, you know, having really radical, amazing public schools is a form of public safety. And we need to demand and push back and make transparent, you know, the ways in which our cities are telling us what public safety is when we know that that's not true.
My name is Rachel Herzing. I live in Oakland, California in the United States. And right now I'm on a fellowship that helps me have some time to look at alternatives to calling the police in instances of emergency and figuring out different ways to think about first responders. And the rest of the time I'm a rabble-rouser around imprisonment and policing generally. I believe in the abolition of the entire prison industrial complex, and I think it's crucial to our survival to fight for that. And as a brown person in a very white place, got lots of unwanted police attention of various sorts, from kind of trailing around to actual physical harm. For many years, I didn't have any idea about what to do with that, or I knew I was mad all the time, but I didn't really exactly understand why. And I think over the years began to understand that none of any of those kind of apparatuses, law enforcement, or any of the drivers that sent people who I love to live in cages, were for anybody's protection. They really were about containment and control. And so I had had that experience my own self, and I had also had that experience of people around me.
The thought of not having a place to put someone when they're harming someone, or not to exclude someone from a group for behavior that they've done, it just seems like a far-out concept for some people. They can't grasp it. When you hear people question abolition and question they say it's such a far-out there thing to align yourself with, how do you respond to that?
I think that it really depends on, I try to figure out what they do care about. Right? Because imprisonment, policing, surveillance impact every aspect of everybody's life in some way or another, right? To my mind, the way to reduce harm that we do to each other, that the state does to us, is to figure out how to take those harms very seriously, but then also how to create environments where we can actually shift people's behavior. If you lock somebody in a cage and effectively disappear them from their family, effectively disappear them from their communities, they don't have opportunities to change their behaviors. They don't have opportunities to be in relationship to people who love them and can hold them accountable. They don't have an environment in which they can understand the harm that they've done. Something happens, they get pushed all the way to the margins of society and kind of left for dead, more or less, right? And some people literally left for physical death, but some people left for social death as well, right? And if we genuinely care about the health and well-being of each other, and that means like the people who we think are the most vulnerable, like children and others who really don't have as many protections for them. And we also care about the health and well-being of society as a whole. Then we have to be invested in shifting those dynamics, in shifting the physical environments we lived in, and shifting the social environments that we live in. And that's impossible to do as long as we're willing to make some categories of people disposable.
I'm Julia Faipoti, and I'm the chair of Just Speak. We're a group over in New Zealand that work on criminal law change based on evidence and experience and try to get young people engaged in that conversation. Even though we're a small population with 4.5 million people, our incarceration, so our people in prison, we're second to comparable states and only to the United States in terms of the people we have in prison compared to our general population. We also, which is a similar experience in Australia, have over half of our prison population is Indigenous people, are Māori. So we have 15% of the general population are Māori, yet 50% of our men's prisons are Māori, 60% of our rangatahi, our young people in the system, are Māori, and 64% of our women's prison population are Māori. These statistics have remained relatively the same since the 1950s, although we've seen a dramatic increase in our women's prison population in the last 20 years.
You know, every woman that I work with has had a life that's been characterised by violence, you know, really nearly without exception. The men I work with have also similarly had lives that have been characterised by violence. The fact is that prison as a form of punishment doesn't create the solutions that we need to eliminate levels of intimate or collective violence in our society. Kia ora, my name's Tracy McIntosh. I'm the co-director of Ngā Pae o te Maramatanga, which is New Zealand's Māori Centre of Research Excellence. While I don't believe in the case of perhaps that woman that we're talking about, it's not her responsibility to try to address the issues of the man who did a lot of harm to her. But I do believe we have a collective responsibility to do that. I believe that responsibility starts very early. In Aotearoa, New Zealand, we're spending such a huge amount of money to incarcerate our people. One of the things is about how would we, if it was up to us to determine how the money was spent, how would we spend it in our communities? Where would we create the spaces of change? What types of solutions, and we've seen it with our iwi, with our tribal solutions, what types of solutions do we need to wrap around people so that they can, so that their identity, their collective identity is reinforced, that they can be involved in what we would call mana-enhancing activities, prideful activities that create long-term generational change. It's not a quick fix, we know that. This is a generational fix, but we can do it.
Tracy McIntosh, the co-director of the Māori Centre for Research Excellence, with her colleague Julia Faiputi, the chair of Just Speak, which advocates for criminal law reform in Aotearoa, New Zealand. We also heard from American delegates Rachel Herzing and Erica Miners, both abolitionists and critics of the prison industrial complex. They were all speaking with Karina Hogan at the Sisters Inside 8th International Conference in Brisbane.